ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚಾರಿನೇ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೃಂಗವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ ಬಲದೇವ್ ಸುಭದ್ರ ನಾರಾಯಣ ಕೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಗೌರ್ನಿತಾಯ ಕೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾ ರಾಧನಾಥ ಕೀ ಓ ವಿಪ್ರಿ
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Sri Sri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Devi ki
jai.
Sri Sri Nitai Gaura Sundara ki
jai.
Hare Krishna. Welcome everyone to our New Year's Eve special program 2011 to 2012. This evening, well, every year since 1999-2000, since that time, we've had special New Year's Eve programs. And every year, it's growing and growing, and more devotees are coming, more people are coming, and the whole program is becoming more and more blissful, more and more ecstatic. And this year, 2011-2012, we have the most wonderful program of all time. The most wonderful program of all time until next year, New Year's Eve. So, what we decided to do this evening is that, well, we will have our traditional Harinam from perhaps 10-ish or so. We'll go around the local area with Harinam. That will be very wonderful. But from now until then, we will have a most extraordinary and most wonderful program of Srila Prabhupada Katha. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Srila Prabhupada Katha ki
jai.
And here with us, as you can see, we have a really amazing group of devotees. We are very fortunate, and I'm extremely happy that we have with us tonight for this special program His Holiness Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj. Maharaj is so well known and so much loved by everyone here. He needs no introduction. But he is one of Srila Prabhupada's most wonderful sons and most dedicated servants. Then we have with us on your right of Bhakti Charu Maharaj, closest to Lord Balaram, His Grace Mahatma Prabhu. Now, I think many of you here do not really know Mahatma Prabhu, but he is one of the great foundations of ISKCON in South Africa. He was temple president in Johannesburg way back 1981, 1982, that sort of time, heading up the preaching in Johannesburg very successfully. And what a wonderful devotee who made a wonderful contribution to Prabhupada's movement here in South Africa. He has not been here since 1983. He has not even seen, I think, even yet, Shishi Radha Radhanath Temple. Can you imagine? So he is here though to share with us this evening. We're looking forward very much to hearing from him. Then we have here on my immediate left His Grace Shuddhi Prabhu, who I think you all know by now, also one of the very great foundation stones of Srila Prabhupada's movement here in South Africa. He was here before anyone. He was here way back in the early 70s. So, but you know Shuddhi Prabhu now to some degree. What I particularly, well, so many things I appreciate about Shuddhi Prabhu, but one is how he tells us that when he came, and he's moving around Durban and moving around here and there. And those days, you know what it was like. He saw some public facilities and it said European and non-European. So he went into the non-European one because he said, I'm from America. I'm not from Europe. So he made a really amazing contribution to Srila Prabhupada's movement. And then of course our very own, one and only, His Grace Shamlal Prabhu. Who has been here plus or minus 30 years. Preaching so wonderfully, encouraging people so wonderfully to get involved in Krishna consciousness. And of course he had so much association with Srila Prabhupada. And again, I just can't wait to hear some of the nectar from him. And then of course, what to speak of His Holiness Bhakti Vasudev Maharaj. Well, you know him, you're getting to know him now, step by step. Very wonderful preacher, very dedicated devotee, and really becoming integrated into ISKCON South Africa. I believe he is learning Zulu and Afrikaans to increase his preaching. Anyway, it's very nice he's here with us. So we're going to have, I think, just a really outstanding evening tonight. Some very, very wonderful Prabhupada katha. And then I think it's raining, so that was a special arrangement. It will rain itself out while the Prabhupada katha goes on. And then we will go out. And the rain will have rained itself out, it will have finished. And in this way, we will ring in with K Kirtan, by the mercy of Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Devi, Nitai Gaura Sundar, and Srila Prabhupada, we will ring in the new year 2012. For the time being, we will have our special program of Srila Prabhupada Katha. And who better to start with than His Holiness Bhakti Churu Swami Maharaj. So the devotees here, our senior devotees, Prabhupada disciples, will take it in turns, 5, 10 minutes, whatever, like that, and this way everyone can have 2 or 3 sessions, whatever, as the inspiration comes. So first of all, Bhakti Churu Maharaj, and then I think after Bhakti Churu Maharaj, I think we'll hand over to His Grace Mahatma Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Hare Krishna.
Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitangena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishthan Sthapitan Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaiham Dadati Swabhadantikam. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivashari Gaurapati. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama. I feel very fortunate that somehow or other I came to the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada. There are many possibilities that I could have drifted away. I could have sunk into materialistic way of life. I could have drifted away to some other spiritual path, especially when I was searching for a guru. I went back to India at a certain point in time to find a guru, and I was searching. I consider it to be very, very fortunate that I couldn't find one. If at that time I could find a guru, then probably I would have missed out on the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada. Fortunately, I was totally disappointed with all those so-called spiritual personalities in India. I was searching for a guru, I couldn't find any. And then finally, when I practically gave up my search, thinking that if at all I have a guru, then let him come and pick me up. I thought, I had been searching for my guru for so long, I couldn't find him. If at all I have a guru, then let him come. Let him pick me up. I'm not going to search for him. And thinking that, I gave up my search. And it was at that time that I came across Srila Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion. And from the very first page of Nectar of Devotion, I realized that this is the way, this is the path that I was actually searching for. And I was so fascinated by that book that I kept on reading until I fell asleep. And then the next morning when I woke up, the first thing I did to start to read the book. And that night, I had a dream. And in that dream, I saw Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was sitting on a Vyasasana that, to me, at that time, looked like Prabhupada was sitting on a throne. And there was a brilliant light emanating from Srila Prabhupada's divine body. Just that sight made it clear to me that finally I found my spiritual master. I didn't ask any question to Srila Prabhupada. I did not do anything, simply offered obeisances. And my heart was filled with a tremendous joy that finally I found my spiritual master. Then I went to the temple, ISKCON temple in Calcutta, and I was told that Srila Prabhupada was in America at that time. And I thought I would wait till Srila Prabhupada came back to India, and then I will surrender to him. Thinking that, I started my search of the places of pilgrimage. I was told that ISKCON has a temple in Mayapur, which is the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Thinking that, I just went to Mayapur. And that was it. The devotees were so welcoming. Everyone practically was inviting me to come and stay. Those days Mayapur had a very small, rather small community of devotees. Most of them were from Europe and America, mostly America. And very few Indians, local Indians actually, were part of our movement there. And the whole atmosphere there was so spiritually surcharged that I also started to think that this is where one should be. And thinking that I, the next morning, I went to a barber, got my head shaved, got dhoti and a kurta, and went to the Ganges, took a bath, threw away my old clothes, and put on the devotee clothes. Everyone in Mayapur was actually inviting me to stay. And of course that invitation undoubtedly was genuine and heartfelt. But to me it seemed that everyone was shocked to see my response, that I already got shaved up and I accepted the path of devotion. Became a part of ISKCON that way. At that time, I had a thought that I will give it a try, and if it doesn't work, if I don't like it, in 2 months' time, my hair will grow. If I wanted, I could leave. But my hair didn't grow since then. And I also didn't have that opportunity, or didn't really have any reason to not to stay on in this movement. And the next fortunate thing was when Prabhupada came back to India, and we got to know that Srila Prabhupada came to Bombay, and then Prabhupada went to Allahabad to Kumbh Mela. That was in 1976 end. And we also went to Kumbh Mela from Mayapur. About 40 devotees, we traveled in a bus, rented bus. We drove from Mayapur to Allahabad to Kumbh Mela. And then after a few days in Kumbh Mela, Srila Prabhupada decided to leave for Calcutta. And when Prabhupada was in Kumbh Mela, I used to visit the lectures of Srila Prabhupada in the evenings. And morning, often Prabhupada used to give Bhagavatam classes, and there used to be Guru Puja. I used to attend those programs, but never really tried to get close to Srila Prabhupada, because I could see that so many devotees were surrounding Srila Prabhupada, and so many other devotees were dying to have a moment's association of Srila Prabhupada. So I used to consider, who am I to get close to Srila Prabhupada? And then, one morning, we got the news that Srila Prabhupada was going to leave the Kumbh Mela. And I got the news and I felt, well, Prabhupada wanted to leave. And my feeling was, well, Prabhupada will leave, but I think we all will continue to stay in Kumbh Mela and do book distribution and attend different other spiritual activities and preach to the extent we could. But then one of our very senior god brothers, who was the leader of our movement at that time, Bhavananda Maharaj, he was a sannyasi at that time. So he came to, I was very close to him. Because I joined in Mayapur, he was the leader of Mayapur along with Jayapataka Maharaj. Those days Jayapataka Maharaj and Bhavananda Maharaj were the two co-directors of Mayapur. And so Bhavananda Maharaj came to me and told me that, you know, Prabhupada is leaving today. I told him, yes, I already heard. And then he said, Prabhupada will be traveling by train, because in Allahabad there was no airport. So train, railway was the only mode of communication there. So he said, Prabhupada will take a train tonight, and a small group of devotees will be traveling with Srila Prabhupada, and you have been included in that team. And I was so happy to hear that I had the good fortune of traveling with Srila Prabhupada. And then at night the train started, we all took rest. It was actually a Calcutta-bound train from Delhi, and a special arrangement was made that a carriage was hooked onto the train, a first-class carriage was hooked onto that train for Srila Prabhupada and his party to travel to Calcutta. So we are traveling in that carriage, a few of us. I think only about 14 devotees were traveling in the carriage at that time. So the train started, we all took rest. Next morning I was chanting my rounds. Then Bhavananda Prabhu came to me and he said, come, I will take you to Srila Prabhupada. Now all this while I was dying to meet Srila Prabhupada. But when this opportunity, when the real time came to be with Srila Prabhupada, to be introduced to Srila Prabhupada, I felt very, very unqualified to even go near him. So I was kind of hesitating. I didn't say anything. I just kept on sitting there, and all kinds of thoughts were flushing across my mind. Pertaining to this feeling that I was not qualified to go to Srila Prabhupada. Probably Bhavananda Prabhu could understand that,
So he caught me by my hand, dragged me through the corridor, and opened Prabhupada's compartment door and pushed me in. And I fell flat on the ground, offering obeisances. And when I got up, I saw that Srila Prabhupada was looking at me, and Prabhupada asked me to sit next to him. And I was feeling very embarrassed. I told Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, I would rather sit on the floor, because the first class compartment in Indian trains have two rows of seats facing each other. On one, Srila Prabhupada was sitting, and the other one, three sannyasis, Bhavananda Maharaj, Jayapataka Maharaj, and Rameshwar Maharaj, who was Prabhupada's secretary at the time, they three of them were sitting. And the temple president of Calcutta was sitting on the floor. Now Prabhupada asked me to sit next to him. So I was naturally very embarrassed, and I said, "I would sit on the floor." And Prabhupada said, "No, you sit here." So when Prabhupada insisted, so I there was a blanket that was spread over the seat. So I rolled up the blanket and sat on one corner. Then after some initial exchanges, Srila Prabhupada told me to translate his books into Bengali. He told me, "You translate my books into Bengali." And that service actually allowed me to have access to Srila Prabhupada at any time. And that allowed me or enabled me to be close to Srila Prabhupada. We went to Calcutta, and Calcutta was actually my city, my place where I grew up, where I spent a lot of time. And because I was in Mayapur, we also had very close link with Calcutta. We used to spend a lot of time in Calcutta. So when Prabhupada came to Calcutta, it was something like Prabhupada came to our temple. And I was with Prabhupada all the time, and the devotees were very happy that Prabhupada came and we were spending time together. And it was at that time, one evening, Prabhupada stayed in Calcutta for 3 days or 4 days. And then Prabhupada went to Bhubaneswar. At that time, I could have gone with Srila Prabhupada to Bhubaneswar, but I did not, because I was printing one book. Like, I collected the articles that Srila Prabhupada wrote in a magazine, a Gaudiya Math magazine called Gaudiya Patrika, from 1948 onwards. And I collected those writings of Srila Prabhupada, one series of writing called Bhagavaner Katha. And I was knowing that Srila Prabhupada very much appreciated that you printed books, that I collected those writings of Srila Prabhupada, and I was printing one book. So I thought that I would present that book to Srila Prabhupada. And so that's why I didn't go to Bhubaneswar with Srila Prabhupada, but stayed back in Calcutta. Then Prabhupada came back to Mayapur from Bhubaneswar. And one day, Srila Prabhupada called me, and one afternoon, and Srila Prabhupada gave me a stack of letters written in Bengali, and he asked me to answer those letters. The way I started to answer them was, I would read the letter out to Srila Prabhupada, and then Prabhupada would give the points. I would take those points, and based on those points, I would write the reply, and take that draft to Srila Prabhupada, read it out to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada would make some corrections if necessary. And then I used to write those letters on Srila Prabhupada's letterhead, and then Srila Prabhupada used to put his signature there. So this is how I started to answer Srila Prabhupada's letters. And when the Bengali stack of letters were finished, Prabhupada gave me a stack of Hindi letters. Yeah, before that, Prabhupada actually asked me whether I knew Hindi. And I told Prabhupada, yes, I know Hindi, but my handwriting is not so nice. My Hindi handwriting is not so nice. Then Srila Prabhupada said, nobody's Hindi handwriting is nice. Then Prabhupada told a joke. He said, once a person received a letter from his friend, and he wrote him back saying that next time you write a letter to me, you please send me the train fare also to go to you. So the friend replied, why do you want me to send you the train fare? Then he wrote back saying that to figure out what you wrote, I have to go back to you. So in this way, Prabhupada assured me that no matter how bad my Hindi handwriting is, it won't be that bad. So Prabhupada gave me the stack of Hindi letters and asked me to answer them. Prabhupada used to receive a lot of letters. And one thing about Prabhupada I saw from that Prabhupada always made it a point to reply the letters he received. And yes, Prabhupada made a proper arrangement, but it was Prabhupada's very sincere concern to reply them. And then it was around that time, one day Prabhupada told me that he was going to appoint me as his secretary for Indian affairs. And then he called Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who was Prabhupada's secretary at that time, and he told Tamal Krishna Maharaj that he was appointing me as his secretary for Indian affairs. Tamal Krishna Maharaj was very happy to hear that, and we already developed a nice relationship. And this also gave me another wonderful opportunity to be in the same room with Tamal Krishna Maharaj for practically 10 months until Srila Prabhupada left the planet. Tamal Krishna Maharaj and I started to share Prabhupada's secretary's room, which was just next to his room. Not exactly next to his room. Originally, Prabhupada's secretary's room was just next to Prabhupada's room in Mayapur. But Prabhupada used to feel disturbed about the sound of the typewriter. The secretary used to type the letters, and those days there was no computer, there was no electronic typewriter, so just those manual typewriter, and they used to make a lot of noise, a lot of sound. So Prabhupada used to feel disturbed about that, and so this is how Prabhupada's secretary's room was shifted to the room next to that one, and Prabhupada's personal servant used to use the room immediately next to Srila Prabhupada's room. And so this is how I also had the very good fortune of having some very, very wonderfully close association with a wonderful devotee, my very wonderful senior god brother, His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj. So now I'll pass on to Mahatma Prabhu.
Just one thing, if we could make a little announcement. Could we please move forward at the devotees and clear the doorway? Particularly the men. Can you move forward, please, if you don't mind? And the ladies might as well move forward a bit also. And please keep the door clear. So now we will hand over to His Grace Mahatma Prabhu.
Prabhajnana timirandasya gyananjana shalakaya Chakshuro militam jena tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Ukam karoti vachalam pangu langayate girim yakripa tamaham vande Sri Guru dinatarinam. Banchakapatrubhyascha kripa sindhu vyevacha Patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nityananda Shuddhaita Gadadhar Srivasari Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So since Bhakti Charaswami was speaking about how he met Srila Prabhupada, I might as well mention how I met him. And before I mention that, I wanted to remark that there was a well-known female writer in America, and she said that you don't always remember what a person said when you were with them, but you always remember how you felt when you were with them. So if you ask the devotee about Prabhupada, they can tell you some things that he said, but certainly not everything. And often what remains is the experience. You tend to remember the experience. And often devotees who did not have Prabhupada's association will ask, what was it like to be with Srila Prabhupada? I'm sure you all wonder, right? What was it like? Like you might wonder, what was it like to be with Jesus Christ if you're a Christian or if you're a Muslim? What was it like to be with Muhammad? So if you're a devotee in ISKCON, then naturally you wonder, what was it like to be with Srila Prabhupada? So, I first met Srila Prabhupada at a point where I had made a decision to become a devotee, but I had not yet committed to chanting 16 rounds and to following all the principles. But I had been going to college and I had returned home to tell my parents of my decision to become a devotee. And by Krishna's grace, the temple, this was in Los Angeles, was about 3/4 of a mile from where I grew up in that house. So the day after I returned from college, I went to the temple. The next day I returned, and when I got there, they said, Srila Prabhupada is coming. I had no idea. Would you like to come and greet him at the airport? So what do you think I said? Too busy, right? No. No time. No, so I went. Yes. So mind you, this was a 19 years old, I'd been associating with devotees for 10 weeks. And I got to go to the airport and see Srila Prabhupada. As soon as I saw him, I began crying. I was just, you know, an ordinary person who had heard from the devotees, read Bhagavad Gita. And then when I saw Prabhupada, that was my first emotion, just overwhelmed. If you ask why I was crying, I can't tell you. I was just overwhelmed, just seeing him. That was it, just that experience. And then subsequently, as I became a devotee, what I remember most in being with Srila Prabhupada, the experience I remember most, is just the desire to give my life to Krishna whenever I was in his presence. And normally when you consider giving your life to Krishna, you have doubts. Well, what if? Right? You don't ever think like that? Well, if I just surrender, what if? What if I won't be happy? What if I can't do this? How will I live? There's so many considerations. And I remember in Srila Prabhupada's presence, those considerations were never there. It was just the spontaneous desire to give everything I had, body, mind, words, intelligence, whatever I had, just give it to Srila Prabhupada. And I think everyone felt that. It wasn't like I was special. But that was the experience of being in the association of a devotee, a pure devotee like that, who just wanted to give. Another experience I remember is that Prabhupada was a revolutionary. And he was creating a revolution, and we were well aware that he was creating a revolution. And we were all hippies, so we liked revolutions. So it was really a perfect match, a marriage made in heaven. The revolutionary comes to the revolutionary hippies, and we jump on board. And we were excited. And not only were we excited about the revolution, but the revolution that Prabhupada was creating was a revolution of compassion. Because he wanted to save everyone in this world. He wanted to give every last person Krishna consciousness. And in his presence, he infused that desire within our hearts, which is quite interesting because he infused this desire in the hearts of very new devotees who were basically just off the street. In those days, many people join the movement right off the street. They come to the temple once, twice, and then become devotees. 2 days later, they were out on Sankirtan. I mean, that was just normal. Nobody thought anything of it. And they're out there preaching, saving the conditioned souls. How does that happen? Someone off the street, here, would you like to become a devotee? Okay. 2 days later, here's your book bag. Save the conditioned souls. Jai. Mission. So how was that happening? Because that desire of Prabhupada was planted in the hearts of the devotees. And so then you join a temple and everyone in the temple has that desire. So you come there and by osmosis you get it. And you go out and you give your life. I was telling yesterday, I think it was yesterday, I was telling the devotees that in 1970 or 71, Prabhupada was traveling in India. And we would get letters periodically from his secretary with quotes from Srila Prabhupada of things he said, maybe a letter of like 10 quotes, just to keep us informed what Prabhupada was doing. So then we got this one letter. And Prabhupada said, anyone who will spread Krishna consciousness, will go anywhere to spread Krishna consciousness without considering how he will eat, where he will live, to that person I will take the dust of their feet and I will put it on my head. So when we heard that, I was telling the devotees, when we heard that, we just filled our van full of books, took enough money for one tank of petrol, and drove off into the winter in Canada to spread Krishna consciousness. And we didn't want to take any more money because we didn't want to know where we were going to live. And we didn't want to be able to figure out how we were going to eat. So you might think, you guys were crazy. You guys were fanatical. But the point is that Prabhupada's desire to spread Krishna consciousness, it was planted in our hearts that we would do those things. It's crazy, right? We drove off, we're talking like below freezing weather, and with no money, into a new town that no one's ever been to. And we arrived in the town at 8 in the evening with no money. And somehow or other, we were able to go on. We found a place to stay, people fed us, and so forth. So I was thinking of a question that you might have, devotees might wonder. How was it that the Krishna consciousness movement spread so quickly, considering that the devotees who were spreading it were not very experienced? I was made a temple president, and I had been a devotee 8 months. I just turned 20. And that was normal. 20, 21, 6 months a year, you go and you either become a temple president or you start a temple. We didn't think that was strange. That was normal. How could that happen? I told the story yesterday of the devotees were in India on a train going, I think, maybe to Gujarat, and they met a man, and the man said, "You know, it would be nice if you have a temple in Delhi." And Srila Prabhupada said, "Yes, that is a very good idea." So when the train stopped in Delhi, I think there were two couples, he said, "Get off the train and start a temple." Kind of like, I've just come to visit South Africa. "Mahatma, you were the president of Joburg. Prabhupada wants you to stay here and open a new temple there." But my family, but no. But there were no buts. We would just do that. So, Srila Prabhupada's compassion, his desire to spread Krishna consciousness, was being infused into the hearts of his disciples. And that's how the movement spread. It was simply, it was just a movement of compassion. That's all it was. And in that mood, that naturally, we weren't thinking about ourselves. We weren't thinking about our comforts. We were just thinking how we could spread Krishna consciousness. Then, what we did in this Canadian trip, we figured out how to distribute big books, and no one had ever done that before. And then we wrote Prabhupada. And he said, "The symptom of an advanced devotee is he takes every opportunity to spread Krishna consciousness." So he was encouraging us. And then I noticed that around 1973 or 1974, book distribution started taking off in America. And it was at that time that Prabhupada started enthusing book distribution. There's so many letters came out in those years. And devotees were dedicating themselves more and more and more. And Prabhupada was so happy, and he was enthusing them more and more and more. So then I told this funny story. I'm telling this because most of you weren't here. That one day I saw the traveling Sankirtan party loading the van. This was in Los Angeles, probably 1973 or 1974. And they were loading boxes about this size, about that high, about this size. And I said, "Well, what's in the boxes?" And they said, "Peanuts and raisins." And I said, "What's it for?" And they said, "Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We don't want to waste time cooking." Can you imagine? And that was just normal. They didn't think that was strange. They thought, actually, that was a good idea. You save so much time. You don't have to go shopping, you don't have to do any cooking. And so they wanted to be on the street as many hours as possible distributing Prabhupada's books. So really it's amazing if you consider how he was able to transform the hearts of people who knew nothing about bhakti, who knew nothing about Krishna. And within a few weeks, they were dedicating themselves fully to spreading Krishna consciousness. So like I was saying, in Prabhupada's presence, we just felt like surrendering to Krishna. There was no resistance. I mean, look at our lives now. Talk about surrender. There's a lot of resistance. I don't want to do this, I don't want to go there, what if this, what if that. There was no resistance, it was just a flood of desire. And that was the value or the experience of being in Srila Prabhupada's presence. At least that was my experience, and I perceived it was other people's experience. Another experience I had, a very interesting experience. Srila Prabhupada came to Detroit in 1975, and by divine arrangement, I was transferred to Detroit just for that summer when he was there, so I got to be there with him. And it was time for Guru Puja, and I was standing near Prabhupada's Vyasasan, but there was nobody doing the Guru Puja. And so Brahmananda, he just pushed me to the Vyasasan to do the Guru Puja, and I had never done that before. So I began doing Guru Puja to Prabhupada. And I was looking at Prabhupada and I was feeling that something is strange here, because from the expression on Prabhupada's face, he doesn't seem to be reacting to the fact that he's being worshipped and there are 350 people in the temple jumping up and down singing Jai Prabhupada. It was actually as if he was sitting on a seat and there was nobody in the room. I'm offering this puja, and it was almost like, Prabhupada, I'm over here, you know, I'm offering you puja, you know? Like, hello? Prabhupada, there's 300 devotees chanting your name, you don't notice? It's a completely, uninterested in any form of worship whatsoever. So that was another experience. Of course, there are so many experiences. But like Bhakti Charaswami, when I was with Prabhupada, I was really afraid to say anything, because I thought if I said something, Prabhupada would see how foolish I was. So I only said one thing once. I kind of regret having said it, but but I was very fortunate to be placed as temple president at a time in the movement when there was no GBC, because basically Prabhupada was the GBC, and Prabhupada required that every month temple presidents would write letters to him. So I'd have to write the letter, but since I was writing the letter, I could ask questions, so I would take advantage. So one time I asked Prabhupada a question. I said, Srila Prabhupada, I was doing traveling sankirtan and it was very blissful. And I was very Krishna conscious. But when I come back to the temple, to manage the temple, I'm so busy I can't think of Krishna. There's just too much going on. So I said, what's the whole point? Should I do less so I can think of Krishna more? Or is the point to do more even though I think of Krishna less? So Prabhupada wrote me back a letter. First thing he said was, and this shocked me actually, he said, the whole point of everything is to become absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. And then I thought, oh my God, absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. I don't even think of Krishna when I chant japa. Really? I mean, I think a little bit, but not so much. Or to speak of being absorbed. So I felt so fallen and guilty and embarrassed and hopeless. And then Prabhupada said, you should think that you are totally unqualified to be the temple president. And he said, because if you think that way, you will completely depend on Krishna to help you, and then you'll always think of Krishna. That was his answer. He didn't say, do less and think of Krishna more. He just said, think you're not qualified, and so you'll always pray for qualification. So that's what we did. And we used to pray like that because we were unqualified. Then I'll end here with a story to give everyone else time. This is a very nice story. So I have to give some context for this story. I was put in charge of that temple 8 months after I joined, and I had just turned 20. And I had dropped out of college after 2 years. And, you know, I was studying philosophy and music and like that. And I wasn't getting an MBA. I wasn't into business and management. But I was put in charge of a temple. And I felt kind of awkward being in charge of a temple. It wasn't my natural disposition to be a manager. Secondly, there was a problem because in that temple, it was a remote temple, it was in Canada, and there were only three other devotees besides myself. And the closest temple was in America. It was a few hundred miles away. And one of the devotees was schizophrenic. He was the nicest guy you could ever meet, and he was the nastiest, worst monster you could ever meet 10 minutes later. And he was like the treasurer, so, you know. And it was putting me into severe anxiety. The second devotee there, I don't know if you're aware of this, he ended up leaving ISKCON, and he wrote a letter to Prabhupada, and he said, Srila Prabhupada, you should take shelter of Guru Maharaji, who was at that time, he was masquerading as a Bal Krishna, you know, baby, boy Krishna. His mother said he's God, and then a few years later, they got in a fight, and she said he's not God. So you could understand where this devotee was at. But then, there was another devotee you may know, Sridhar Maharaj. You know Sridhar Maharaj? Did he ever come here? You may know Sridhar Maharaj. So Sridhar Maharaj and I had a little friction. I could sing, he couldn't sing that well. I could play mandanga, he couldn't play that well. I was in charge, he wasn't. Actually, he was way more qualified, so I could understand why he felt that way. But anyway, and then I was raised in California, where it's weather's like this. We, our old friends, Americans, who used to be here in South Africa, we'd say, Durban is like San Diego, Johannesburg is like Los Angeles, and Cape Town is like San Francisco. So I had never seen snow before, and then here I am in this country where there's snow, and that was like severe torture for me. So I had these three devotees that were totally driving me crazy. I didn't like to manage. There was snow there, and then when I got there, they told me there was $500 in the bank, and the rent was $250, had to be paid in a few days. I got to the bank, there's only $50 in the bank. But there was nobody to turn to. You know, it was just anxiety. I was in anxiety. I was in so much anxiety. I was in 100 times more anxiety than I'd ever been before I was a devotee. Welcome to the Hare Krishna movement. Therefore, they have that joke. The devotee's talking to the donkey, and the donkey's going, meh, meh. And the devotee keeps talking to him, and the donkey's going, meh, meh. He said, Prabhu, what were you saying? He said, I was asking him if he wanted to be an ISKCON temple president. So I was like that donkey, like, get me out of here. I was in total anxiety. said, one evening I had this dream, and in the dream Prabhupada came and he was rubbing my hands. Like I could feel him rubbing my hands, like, it's okay, everything's okay, everything's going to be okay. And I felt completely soothed. Shortly thereafter, those three devotees left and went to other temples. And somehow or other, by Krishna's arrangement, 11 devotees joined the temple in like 3 months. And these were like the nicest devotees. It was like sweet as pie, wonderful devotees. And so the whole thing turned around and we had this wonderful temple. And so I remember to this day, that's like 41 years ago, that dream. And Prabhupada just, it's Vancouver. Prabhupada was just, that's okay, and just rubbing my hand. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Thank you very much, Mahatma Prabhu. Next, we will call on His Grace Shuddhi Prabhu.
Namaste Saraswati Devi Guravani Pracharani Nirvasesha Shunyavati Vistachita Satarji. So I'm so honored to be here with my god brothers Bhakti Maharaj, Bhakti Chaitanya Swami, Mahatma Das, all of you here. They tell such inspiring stories about their surrender to Srila Prabhupada. We'll talk about a little bit the same way how books and coming to Srila Prabhupada, because it's amazing. I lived in Laguna Beach, and Laguna Beach was a special town because one third of the people at the high school were vegetarians, and there was one store there that had a health food store in it, and a clothing store, and a bookstore. And so the people used to ask me to watch, sell the books for a couple hours. And so I was reading the one book called Teachings of Lord Chaitanya by Prabhupada. And it said that bhakti meant that we just go, that we just ask for some way to develop love of God. That we don't ask for something for ourselves. And I thought, that sounds interesting. And I used to go to my special meditation rock and I would pray for some way to develop love of God. And it's amazing because the devotees had preached in this town and the people were hippies and it was a big marijuana dealing town and all that kind of stuff. They were running Timothy Leary for governor, the people that ran the store. And they would say that, you know, someday for real spiritual life, we have to give up illicit sex and intoxication. Of course, they weren't ready yet. But the seed was planted by devotees to them and by them to me. And so I used to go to this special meditation rock to pray for some way to develop love of God. And it was interesting because before that I'd been with these same people to a music concert in 67 and they were singing this song. I said, what's that song? They said, well, there's a Swami named Prabhupada on Pico Boulevard and he taught us this song to God. He said, sing it with us. So as soon as I sang that with them, like 2 days later, a friend of mine was shooting at animals, and then he squished a dove with a rock. And I said, that's a cruel thing to do, isn't it? And he says, well, you eat meat, don't you? I said, yeah, we all do. He said, well, how many animals do they have to kill for you to eat meat? I said, probably a lot. He said, so is it any worse for me to kill the bird? I said, you're right. He said, so it's okay for me to kill the bird? I said, no, I'll never eat meat again.